How does the church year teach us the fundamental narratives of salvation's story? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June is Ordering Our Days in His Peace, An Introduction to the Church Year. It's written by regular guest Pastor Heath Curtis. You can check out Ordering Our Days in His Peace at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase our Book of the Month by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Ordering Our Days in His Peace. It's a difficult thing to understand. Well, on the one hand, it isn't. Islam is very simple. If you view it only as a religion, it's just about the simplest religion out there. It has five pillars. That makes you a Muslim. Boom, you're done. It's viewed religiously. The five things that make a Muslim, there's not a lot to believe in. There's not a lot of doctrines there, although there are some. But of course, Islam isn't just a religion. It is also a worldview, and even more than a worldview, it is something that Christians are struggling with right now, not only trying to know it and understand it, but trying to grasp its impact on the world around us. Yes, even American Christians, where the Muslim population is rather small. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about Christianity and Islam on this Wednesday afternoon, the 27th of June, Dr. Mike Horton. He's a regular guest. He's professor of systematic theology and apologetics at Westminster Seminary in California, co-host of the network radio talk show The White Horse Inn. He's editor-in-chief of Modern Reformation magazine. The theme of the latest issue of Modern Reformation is The Cross and the Crescent. Mike, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks a lot, Todd. Great to be with you.
Why should, in particular, American Christians concern themselves with Islam? It is a minuscule percentage of the population, at least by that way of reading its representation.
Well, yeah, actually, it's growing, first of all, just in terms of population. There are studies I've seen suggest that within a few years, there will be more Muslims than Jews in America, and there are already more Muslims than Episcopalians. Now, I'm not sure if that's a net gain or loss, it's just safe. But it is evidence of the striking change of religious landscape in America.
So when we talk about America, and many do talk about America as a post-Christian culture now, meaning various things, do we have to account for Islam as part of that new landscape?
Absolutely. First of all, because we're so used to thinking about the post-Christian culture in terms of the rise of secularism. And here we have something completely different. Islam is a totalizing worldview that is only secondarily religious. It's cultural, political, social, legal, economic. It's an all-encompassing system, and you know, you talk about the opposite of secularism. We, as Christians, post-Enlightenment Christians, affirm, for example, a distinction between church and state. And there just is no distinction like that in Islam. It's not possible to make a distinction like that in Islam and be consistent with Islamic teaching.
So you say it's only secondarily religious. That's pretty remarkable because many people view Islam kind of through the lens of kind of the leftovers of a Christian culture, thinking of it as primarily religious. What's your response to that?
Yeah, Todd, we have to. I'm becoming more convinced of this. I'm a novice in this area, and I have to listen to people who know a lot more about it than I do. But I'm becoming more convinced by people who know more about it that it's very naive and dangerous, in fact, for us to think about Islam through the lenses of a quote-unquote Judeo-Christian civilization, especially through the lenses of a post-Enlightenment culture that is sort of nominally Judeo-Christian in its influences. It's just a completely different paradigm. And you see that, for example, in countries, for instance, like Switzerland, where already there is just passed the Swiss parliament that Islam can now have its own parliament within the state of Switzerland, and hear cases and adjudicate those cases. In England, Britain, lots of changes are being made to the laws there to accommodate Sharia law, especially with regard to halal meats and so forth. In prisons in America, there is now an acceptable level of indulgence of Sharia law in prisons, where prisoners have their own Muslim prisoners have their own diets. Even some who were not observant before request halal diets and so forth. So those sorts of things are relatively harmless. The problem is when Sharia law or the uniquely Islamic form of jurisprudence begins to create a state within a state that is no longer obligated to the U.S. Constitution. Now, that's from a citizen perspective, not from the perspective of a minister who is wanting to reach out to Muslim neighbors and bring them the good news of the gospel. But it's something that we have to bear in mind.
No, that's the tension here, and I sense it in what you've written recently for Modern Reformation magazine, and that is the deep concerns that Christians ought to have on all those fronts about Islam, but also the concern that each Christian has within their vocation, such as it is, for the individual Muslim. Talk about that.
Yeah, it is so difficult because, you know, on the one hand, we do very much want to, like Paul, appeal to our citizenship in order to defend religious freedom. It's interesting, Paul didn't appeal to his apostleship when he appealed his case to Caesar after the Jewish Sanhedrin had convicted him. He appealed to his Roman citizenship, and I think, you know, we have every reason as American citizens to be concerned that the U.S. Constitution is the highest temporal authority in the land. At the same time, we don't want to get into a culture war where we dig up the memory of Christendom with our Muslim neighbors. They often think that this is a conflict between Islam and the West, and tragically, we have given them too much history to substantiate that. Too often, it's not just Islam that is a cultural system, but Christianity has been co-opted as a cultural, political system, at least in the past. And a lot of Christians now who are bemoaning the dismantling of that preference for Judeo-Christian values sometimes make it sound as if it really is a holy war between Islam and Christianity in geopolitical terms.
So what you're saying here is Christians are being required to shift gears in more than one way when it comes to our encounter with Islam.
Right, right. And this is where the doctrine of the two kingdoms becomes so incredibly relevant, because on one hand, we want to be able to say, look, it's very clear in Islam what the intentions are. This is not, you know, a kind of conspiracy theory. This is history. Islam has a very settled plan. They don't intend to do it over a short period of time, but often over centuries, to, first of all, have Islamic groups that are committed to the whole package of Islam in specific communities, especially where religion isn't taken seriously anymore. Those communities often sort of crumble and give in to Muslim requests. For example, think about the laws in Britain and Denmark. Until fairly recently, there were blasphemy laws, and the last blasphemy case in England was taken up in the 1970s. Finally, it was dismantled, but the idea was that if you blaspheme the name of God, specifically Jesus Christ, in public, then you are liable to penalties. And when Muslims tried to appeal to that, the court decided in England that it only applied to Christianity. Well, that's the problem with a state church. In Denmark, of course, something similar. Muslims were just appealing there with the cartoon of Muhammad. They were appealing to laws that were already on the books against blasphemy. So a lot of the European countries that have been so nominal and have just kept these laws on their books as remnants of a decaying, quote-unquote, Judeo-Christian culture, have taken them off the books. And that does certainly make it cleaner. But, how do we, as Christians, present the gospel to people who think that what we're trying to do is basically legislate a form of Christianity that is equivalent to the geopolitical aims of Islam?
We're talking about Christianity and Islam. Dr. Mike Horton is our guest. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about how exactly to do that, how to clear up that confusion. The Issues Etc. journal's out. This one was a tough one to write because I have to admit to a problem with a particular commandment. The commandment is you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And my problem with it is that it basically has me dead to rights. But you can read more about it in the Issues Etc. journal. All you have to do to subscribe is find that big red button at our website that says subscribe to the Issues Etc. journal. Click it, enter your email address, and you're subscribed. Also in the latest Issues Etc. journal, you'll find Pastor Will Wheaton's journey from nominal Methodism in his early days when he had to actually look up the word Lutheran in an encyclopedia to see what it meant, to being one of the leading voices of confessional Lutheranism in the U.S. today. It's all there in the Issues Etc. journal. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click the big red button that says subscribe to the Issues Etc. journal. When we come back, we'll talk about the problem of equating Christianity with Western culture and how to overcome it. Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn is our guest. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We're talking Christianity and Islam. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn is our guest. Mike, here's a problem, and I'm sure that you probably share this concern. It has to do with the individual Christian dealing with the Muslim next door, even the westernized Muslim, often. And it's easy to see how this mistake could be made, often equates Christianity with Western culture. And then they look at that culture and they say, what are you Christians pushing? Come on, Lady Gaga, you name it. And they're rightly astounded by it. So how do we overcome that obstacle where the average Muslim may unwittingly equate Christianity with Western culture? They believe that Christianity and Western culture are coterminous.
Well, one thing that I do try to do, you know, I live next door to Muslim neighbors and our kids play with them every day. One of the things that I try to do, first of all, is to show them by relating to them that isn't my intention or the intention of our family. So a lot of it has to do with how we interact with our Muslim neighbors on a neighborly level. But part of it, too, Todd, I think, is that we have to explain to them when we have opportunities how radically different Christianity is from Christendom. They don't have this problem because Islam, to the extent that it is faithful to itself, is a culture. So Muslims don't have to apologize for what has been done in the past. They don't have to apologize for Sharia. These are what every faithful Muslim would like to see throughout the world. Christians, on the other hand, can only do that confusion of Christ and culture at the expense of misinterpreting our scriptures. So if you just look at the Quran and the Hadith of Islam, you'll find total justification on a normal, ordinary sense reading of the passages for what Islam is doing in more radical versions around the world. There is no Arab state, for example, that does not impose Sharia law. However, Christians are unfaithful to their biblical text when they confuse any nation state today or, quote-unquote, Christendom around the world with a geopolitical system, because Christ very clearly taught that we're no longer living in Israel. We're no longer living in the Old Covenant where the church and the state were fused. So, first of all, you have to explain that to Christians, for Pete's sake. and then you have to engage Muslim friends and neighbors with the radically different paradigm that they're not expecting here. And I don't think that they're actually going to then, in my experience at least, say, oh, well, now I feel relieved. They don't like that. They think that a religion ought to control the state. But I think that at that point, once we've made the case, once we've talked about the value of religious freedom, the important thing is to get to the gospel, and specifically the resurrection of Christ, because there we're on our home ground. We can appeal to history. They make all sorts of historical claims that can't be historically verified. We have a historically verifiable resurrection in datable history.
Do you share a concern of mine? And it was highlighted, this is now we're kind of going to ancient history, so to speak, at least for Americans. It was highlighted after 2001 and the terrorist attacks on our nation. And I think in a well-intentioned but ill-conceived attempt to build bridges, churches like Willow Creek in South Barrington, Illinois, were inviting Muslim imams in to speak to their congregation, to, you know, kind of a awareness-raising sessions, so to speak. And statements were made, you're aware of them, from Muslim imams saying, look, we Muslims worship Jesus. We regard Jesus even higher than you Christians do. And it goes without commentary, goes without response. Are you concerned that Pop American Evangelicalism, with its kind of general moralism, its failure to distinguish between church and state, the two kingdoms, and its, well, at least they have a moral agenda, isn't that a good thing, kind of attitude, do you think they're susceptible to dropping the ball when it comes to the apologetic and the evangelistic task facing us in Islam?
I think it's entirely possible. I do commend those who say, hey, let's have opportunities for Christians and Muslims, and for that matter, Jews and Buddhists and Hindus and secularists, to get together and talk about what we believe, why we believe it. Those those kinds of opportunities are terrific, as long as we realize that these are not the mandate of the church. You know, people can get together, Christians can get together with Muslims and have a town hall meeting. That could be very valuable, and it could be very valuable for churches to teach Christians more about what Islam teaches. And I think we do need that in the church. We need to be more aware of what our Muslim neighbors actually do believe, and not to caricature their views. At the same time, you know, one of my friends who was a Sharia lawyer and escaped within an inch of his life when he converted to Christianity, as he explains, and this again sounds very conspiratorial, but it comes from Muslim converts, those who actually taught and practiced Islamic law, that Muslims are allowed by Islam to distort the truth in order to make points. And over time, the dhimmi, those who are non-Muslims, that is, those who are apostates in their view from Islam, are going to realize that Islam is the truth, but sometimes a path toward that is prevarication or distortion or, you know, even lie. And that means that we can't really trust the word that Muslims bring when they speak in the name of Allah and have no ethical qualms about telling us what we want to hear. Now, that just means that we need to be on guard. We can't be naive about what we are hearing. You just go back to Islam itself, what it teaches, and it is totally contradictory to Christianity. In fact, Islam teaches that Christianity is a blasphemy, and that one day Jesus will return and take the Christians up into midair where Muhammad will meet up with Jesus and the Christians. And Jesus will tell the Christians that they were wrong to have worshipped him, and that they should have realized that he was a precursor of Muhammad, and that Allah is the only God. And then that will issue in the last judgment. So there is no gospel in Islam. There is no Trinity in Islam. There is no original sin from which we need to be redeemed. It's all simply based on your good merits outweighing your bad. And the only way really to be sure that you are going to have your 18 virgins, a never-ending banquet, is to be a martyr. So this is what Islam teaches. This is what Islam is. This isn't radical Islamism. This is Islam. We've got to know that. We've got to accept that that's what we're dealing with. And then instead of reacting and trying to seek political means of opposing Islam as a church, we need as citizens to protect the religious freedoms enshrined in our Constitution.
Mike, with only about 30 seconds here, should we be aware when dealing individually, like you with your Muslim neighbor there in California, that this person does really believe what Islam teaches, but they may also feel trapped by a culture that they fear to leave?
Yeah, it's definitely true, and that's one of the attractions of the insider movement that Bill Nicodies especially addresses in this issue of Modern Reformation. Really, people should get the issue just to read his article on this movement, concocted not by Muslims, but in the laboratories of evangelical missions agencies, that basically says you don't have to leave Islam, you can be a Muslim follower of Jesus. Well, that's not, obviously Judaism is closer to Christianity, and yet Jews were not just Jewish followers of Jesus. They were persecuted in the early church because they trusted in Christ as the only way, truth, and life. And they were baptized publicly, and they received communion publicly, and they assembled together with the saints publicly. The insider movement is one of those insidious things, again, concocted by well-meaning Christians, that really, ironically, has Muslims riled up. because they're saying that's neither pure Christianity nor Islam. And that's the thing I'm most worried about in all of this, Todd, is that we preserve our fidelity to the gospel and to the means of grace, that we do not capitulate in the interest of making the gospel more palatable to anyone, including our Muslim neighbors.
Dr. Mike Horton is professor of systematic theology and apologetics at Westminster Seminary in California, co-host of the network radio talk show called The White Horse Inn, and editor-in-chief of Modern Reformation magazine. The theme of the latest issue of Modern Reformation is the cross and the crescent. You can find out more about Modern Reformation magazine under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mike, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get former Attorney General Ed Meese's reaction to the Supreme Court's health care decision. We'll also talk to George Conger of Get Religion about media coverage of gay church marriages in Denmark. It's interesting coverage. You'll see what George has to say about it. And then during our pastor's roundtable, we're going to discuss Jesus healing a woman and Jairus' daughter from Mark's gospel. That's our pastor's roundtable and all our programming tomorrow on Issues Etc. We need to understand Islam. We need to see it for what it is. We need to understand that it's more than religion and that it poses challenges to us in both kingdoms. And then we need to stand firm with the clear message of the gospel of Jesus Christ and preach that message in the context of Islam in all of its facets. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
South Africa,
China,
Germany,
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India,
Sweden,
Egypt, France,
Turkey,
Japan,
Australia,
Canada,
United Kingdom,
Hong Kong,
Austria,
Finland,
Malaysia,
Singapore,
Bulgaria,
Korea,
Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico,
Spain,
New Zealand,
Kuwait,